This is Seeds Podcast, bringing you tips, conversations, and information about applied behavior analysis.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk ABA Podcast. Again, we are at season 5, and today we are going to into episode 3 of this series. A bit of a delay from the last episode, but here we are again. And again, like the past 2 episodes in this season, we have Jacqueline with us. Jacqueline. Hi, Jacqueline. To just remind our audience and viewers again, Jacqueline is our special education program coordinator at SEED, and she basically look at a child's academic roadmap and their education roadmap. So, Jack, are you excited for another episode?
I think so, yes. It's been a while.
Yes. So, we've talked a lot about early intervention in the past 2 episodes, right? So, in this episode, I thought we can bring more information to our audience about early intervention goals. So we're going to discuss what goals are usually targeted in an early intervention program, and just really based on our experience, how did we develop an early intervention program for the children on the spectrum. All right, so just recapping, in the last episode we did discuss some skills, right? And we talk about the importance of gradual transition to a school setting, and more specifically when we talk about school setting, we're talking about what we typically envision a school to be with a very big teacher student ratio, right? Like one teacher to at least 15, 20 children.
Yeah.
At a minimum, right?
Yes.
Like some schools has like 30, 50, 40, 50 even, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where we talk about school. That's the picture that we have. And so we spoke about how it was quite difficult for some of our students to transition from one-on-one to this kind of big classroom. We spoke especially about important skills that we used the analogy of a window frame,
mm-hmm,
that's holding all the important skill that makes up a window.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so like I think we said the window pane, which, mm-hmm, is like the glass of the window, are school skills, right? Are skills, mm-hmm, that typically we want to get the kids ready to be able to learn these skills in school. Like, what are some of the examples? Like
writing.
Writing.
Yeah.
So these are like the window pane.
Yes.
The window
glass.
The glass, yes.
Yes.
And then we said the glass cannot be the window without a frame.
A frame. Yes. That, it can't hold itself up.
Right.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when we focus a lot about the frame, which are skills like learning classroom rules, classroom expectation,
routines, yeah,
routines, flexibility in some changes in the classroom.
Yeah, lining up.
Yeah, I think you gave an example of the flexibility of lining up being like, you know, the expectation changes when you're the first in the line.
Yeah, going to snack time. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Versus when you're last in line, the expectation changes slightly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then independence also, right? In, mm-hmm, all team.
Yeah, yeah. That's the window frame.
That's the window frame.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And we said that we want to equip the students with what makes up a window, which it has to be both together, right? It has to be the program and the class, then that's what makes a window. So today, I thought let's talk more about the window pane, which is the glass, which are skills that usually people think of while preparing children for school, or we typically think of. And I think we had several discussion, right, Jack? That we cannot separate the skills out.
Yes.
Because the window is a window. And what's a window without the glass, actually,
correct,
right?
Correct. Right. Yeah.
Even
I think both ways, sorry to interrupt, but I think both ways, as you were talking just now, so I'm literally looking at a window behind you. And actually, what's a window without a glass? But also, what's a window without a frame, right? Right? Because without a frame, then the window can't hold up. Maybe in some instances you may not need the glass, but you definitely need a frame. But ultimately, you need it both together to really make a window, you know? A proper window.
This is I guess, a very typical definition of what a window is.
Correct. Right. Yeah. You need both. Yeah. You're looking at your
it both has to, so our children have to be equipped with both sides of the skills to for them to succeed. Yeah, so that's why I think today we want to talk about what are the skills that makes up better school skills, better equipped children to go to school. So and then I think as we were talking, we also came up with like a Venn diagram, you know, it's another analogy on how like the core of the skills are the independence and school routine, and without its core, those other skills like academic, like writing, right? Learning words.
Yeah.
The skills will sort of be like, they still can learn, but it's sort of like here, there. Am I right to say that?
Yes. I think it's presented to the students. Exposure is there, but how do we know that the skill is really truly being acquired and maintained, right? So that's where the frame comes in, the window frame.
And I think when we see it in a Venn diagram,
yes,
all these skills overlap the core.
Yeah, correct. So imagine, imagine like three circles, and one of the circles is like a pre-academic skills, which is like literacy, counting, you know, so literacy is like reading, writing, you know, recognizing letters, phonics in some cases, and then there's counting, there's pre-writing skills, and then the next circle is the play, right? Learning how to play, interacting in a social setting, taking turns, sharing. And then the third circle would be like daily living skills or functional skills, you know, like maybe sorting, matching, categorizing things, you know, whether it's clothes, socks, utensils, you know, forks and spoons and things like that. So imagine three of that circle, and if it's a Venn diagram, the middle overlaps. And the middle would be, you know, what we spoke about earlier, which is the classroom rules, routines, you know, certain learning behaviors like knowing when to sit at the table and stay seated. Because without staying seated or sitting at the table, we won't be able to learn reading, writing, phonics, and things like that, we won't be able to say, learn to play a game. Maybe some games we need to stand in a hula hoop. You mm-hmm. know, that could be a rule that you follow. So without that overlapping section, which is, you know, these behaviors and routines, even being exposed to, like you said, right, you know, reading and writing is all being exposed, like, here and there. Yes, it is being exposed. Teachers are teaching it. Students are there. But are they really acquiring the knowledge? Are they really, truly learning? That depends on the window frame, which is that part that holds up the window.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point and just got me thinking, maybe they do over time learn and acquire, but perhaps it could have been a faster acquisition.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's what Jack and I always discuss about in our classroom. And so Jack, based on your experience, just so now you did mention a few example skills, right? So are those the common goals, or rather, what are some of the common goals of an early intervention program? And especially, I think in Malaysia, it's a very upcoming, and it's very, everybody kind of know, like, an early intervention program. So I think maybe we start off with talking about what are some of the common goals that parents can expect to see in an early intervention program.
Yeah, I think some of the most common goals that I've heard, you know, over the last decade, includes like what we were speaking about. So a lot of like early literacy stuff, like reading, phonics, you know, recognizing letters, maybe capital letters versus small letters, you know, and then reading phonics, like knowing the sounds of the letters, and then putting, you know, sounds together, making a word, counting, recognizing numbers. What else did we say earlier, like pre-writing skills, you know, pre-writing like fine motor skills, like, you know, pegging, using a wooden peg, and then you eventually use like a marker or a crayon, and then you go smaller to a pencil, you learn how to write, and then you do tracing, pre-writing skill, you do coloring and stuff like that. So I feel like very common, I think, when you speak to anyone who knows about EIP or talks about EIP or runs an EIP program, or even parents who look for EIP programs. I think this is generally, what people look for. And this is generally what's out there. I think these are some of the goals. Including like, you know, those skills, cognitive skills, functioning skills like sorting, matching, categorizing, all these kind of things. And also play. I think play is a big one, because the name itself, early intervention, that means kids are young. And I think at this age, play is very natural for them. So, you know, learning how to play is part of EIP also. So
and they are already in a social environment, right?
Correct. Naturally, I think EIP programs that we hear of, especially in our country here in Malaysia, is a group thing. It's a small group thing, right? Yes, but you said naturally EIP is already in a social setting, in a small group. So it's even easier to teach social play, right? Because there's another peer.
Right.
So you can learn to share, you can learn to take turns, you can even have like some cooperative play, which we actually had today, which is great. It was just very natural, like giving one kid some small little animal figurines and passing it to the other friend who likes to toss things into water. Mm-hmm. And this kid likes to toss in general. So yeah. Toss to the friend, and then the friend toss me into the water. Toss. And until, you know, no more animal figurines. So, yeah, kind of cooperating. Mm-hmm. They both like to watch, you know, the water splash and everything. So that was, mm-hmm. yeah. So these are some things I'm quite confident that a lot of EIPs, you know, focus on.
Thanks for sharing that little example. And I think sometimes with the children we work with who are on the spectrum, when some of these skills are targeted, they inevitably also learn to like peers, because I think that's one of the hardest area.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing that. So, okay. So that's what in Malaysia that's most spoken of. And I guess that's the window pane, right? That's the mirror.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Put a bit clear. Yeah. So that's the whole purpose of the window. But that sounds to me like a lot. So from like pre-academic to and then there's also some of course the play and the social piece, and then there's also daily living a little bit more individualized, I suppose, I'm too sure. And then there's also the cognitive piece, right? Like the matching, sorting, categorizing. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's almost like everything. How can we systematically organize all these in a way so that the children that come to us can develop these skills from where they're at and work towards the goal, a goal that we set for them in an EIP classroom, right? Because they come in with different learning, I want to say learning differences, right? Mm-hmm. Learns different, experiences before stepping into an EIP classroom can be also different, depending on what kind of support they had prior, right? Or you know, experience. How can we do that and also make sure that they achieve the goal that we set that they're supposed to achieve in our classroom, and then the bigger goal is, you know, they eventually successfully assimilate into a school.
I think that's a very good question of how this all comes together, right? Mm. And so earlier we talked about the Venn diagram. And we also talk about like skill acquisition, right? Like, is it quicker or, you know, will it take a lot longer? And I feel like we're going into the area of like, how do we hold all these like window panes together? Like, how do we keep it up, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the most important part, like mm-hmm. You mentioned in your question also, to all our students that come from a different background. So it's so important to identify like where our students are at, like a baseline, right? What can they do already, or what can they not do? And I think from there we can systematically develop like a roadmap. And I think we also spoke a bit about our roadmap
in the first episode,
because it's not necessary, or it's not like a hard and fast rule that okay, 1-to-1 and then EIP and then school. Yeah. Right. Some kids can go from 1-to-1 to school. Some kids need maybe a longer time in EIP and things like that. So, I mean, that will all come into play when we figure out where the kid is at currently. Mm. And then how we can successfully transition them into the next step. Doesn't necessarily have to be school yet, or it could be a transition to school. So once we know like okay, what the students can and cannot do, get the baseline data and things like that, the skills that we spoke about in the Venn diagram, these skills need to be, okay, need to start rolling out. So that's when skills are taught. And I think for us educators, once we get our baseline data, it comes very naturally to us. So we know like, okay, we already have this Venn diagram. So we sort of have a skeleton, an idea, a framework, you know, or rather in the window analogy, we already know what the window panes look like, right? So naturally we know, okay, these things are going to be this child's IEP. So let's say literacy, numeracy, pre-writing. Some kids may come in already knowing how to read, or some kids may not know how to read, but maybe they know how to write, hold a pencil, not write, hold a pencil, you know. So these little things are where things are individualized, I presume. And, so even play, yes, play is so common, it's a general thing. Some kids may already know, I know how to sit for this game, but I don't know how to wait for my turn.
Right.
You know, and things like that. So these things can be, you know, further explored when we develop the individual plans. So we know, again, going back to the Venn diagram, there are pre-academic skills, there's the social play aspect, there's the cognitive aspect, there's the daily functioning aspect, and all of that. Now it falls back on us, the educators, right? Or the teachers. We need to make sure that we deliver.
Yes.
And we deliver effectively. So the whole education system, the whole teaching relationship, the whole teacher-student relationship, it's never one-sided, right? The kid can be so prepared, but if the teacher doesn't deliver, there is no, you know, there is no point. And it just, you know, we both have to carry our weight. So this brings us to the next question, I guess. So good teaching. What is good teaching? We need to be accountable, like you said, to teach effectively, to teach well. And I think good teaching involves so many things, a lot of factors. But personally, I would encourage like teachers or educators to firstly be very analytical. I think it's so important, especially in this field where we're dealing with you know, atypical behaviors, you know, on a daily, we have to be analytical to pay attention to behaviors, why, you know, is the child behaving this way, why did the child do that, you know, and recognizing the whole environment around that, you know, if you know, something may have caused the behavior. So I see you smiling a lot.
can I ask for your permission to
share?
One of my observation, because Jack, for those who don't know, is also currently the main teacher for our EIP program. What I noticed is Jack, actually after every single class, you actually take time. So when you talk about the analytical part, I was smiling because I noticed you doing this, because you will go through all of their IEP daily. And then like almost daily, right? You like where they're at on like the daily living skills, where are they at? Compared to yesterday, compared to today, and then you did that. Yesterday, because like, you know, there's some events that's outside of the classroom, like that. Then the kid was sick, or so. I just want when you talk about analytical part, I'm just reminded of what you do. So you do daily on a daily basis.
Maybe that's why I hope the other teachers do too, maybe. But I think, I don't know, I think it's just, really important. I think you also mentioned earlier, like, you know, kids come from their own past, you know, and it's not just past, like big past, you know, it can be like what happened this morning in the car when he arrived, you know. I mean, personally, that that affects, you know, our current students right now, my current students right now, mm-hmm. that makes a difference to his entire day mm-hmm. in school. And that means his learning, his skill acquisition, everything, there's going to be a difference. And it's important to know that, you know.
Yeah, you're not just going to be like, oh, never mind, today, not working, we see whether it works, not that, right? It's like, how we... analytical, that's the whole point. Analyze and decide that, okay, it's something, you know, that's... But if it's something systematically that's happening every day, mm. that identify what...
I think that's important. And I can understand that in a school, maybe a larger ratio, maybe it can be difficult, but it can be done also, just to take into consideration, you know, how was the kid's morning, for example, mm-hmm. or sleep at night. So to be analytical, pay attention to these things, their behaviors, moods, maybe, you know, hunger, even. I have a student who always comes in very hungry.
At least for the family also, right? Then very hungry today.
Let him eat before working, you know. So all these things, I think it definitely makes up good teaching. And at least for us as educators, we play our part also. Besides analytical. So actually in line with being analytical is also collaboration. Because I think collaboration with not just like colleagues and team members, I think it's also collaborating with families. Mm. I think, like you mentioned, also allowing the families to have a voice, right? To let us know like what's happening and things like that. Actually, now that we've brought that up, after Raya, we're implementing the probe sheet, you know, and it's just a very simple thing where we get parents to share with us like, how was the break? How's your weekend? How's the kid? How, you know, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just important, simple, important information to know.
And that's because you know that after a long break, usually their schedule is off and we want to be prepared, right?
Yes.
Back so that... But while still having our lesson plan in mind and still to roll out the plan, right?
Mm-hmm. Knowing that they still have goals to meet, we still have our lesson plans. Knowing all of that, we also know that we are human. The kids are also human. Even us coming back to work, I think, after a long break. That's like adjustment, right? And I think similar, and it's fair enough for us to also have that expectation of the kids. It's been a long break. Maybe your sleep was interrupted. Maybe you had a very exciting break, you know? So maybe coming back to school is so difficult. It could be all of that. Yeah. But yes, without losing sight, of course, of you know, the learning objectives, the goals, and all the skills that you know, we have. For them to learn, not for them to acquire. Yeah, so the collaboration is, I also think, very important. And communication also comes into play when I talk about collaboration. To communicate effectively with families, also with colleagues, team members, your other teachers, you know, okay, so this happened, or, you know, this is how we're going to do today. Based on the mood or stuff like that. So that is a lot of like
speech therapist.
Right. Let them know like, hey, you know, so this happened, so just to let you know, you know. So then that sounds a bit more like, okay, some background work to your teaching. And then during the teaching, so it's analytical, and also I think for our kids having very clear expectations, clear rules, clear routines. I think a lot of EIPs, including us, we use a lot of visual schedules, right, to show. Okay, so right now it's snack, and then next we're going to do this. And then right now it's circle time, and then we're going to do this, you know. So this helps, I think, manage everybody's expectations to what's coming or how long more, or, you know, and things like that. I think that helps. And then also, I think for us as educators, we... Earlier you mentioned that I look at my data every day. I do. I think it's good to be data driven, to be very data driven, because then you can see pattern, right? And I also know, Alexa, you like graphs. Graphs also help. You know, you can see okay, progress. If there's no progress, why? What happened? You know, so it's good to be data driven, but I also think it's important to be empathetic.
Yes.
Yeah, going back again to their moods, their history, recognizing, okay, maybe it's not a good day, maybe it's not a good morning, to have some empathy. So yes, like for me, I'm aware, like, okay, the last few days, it's like, or maybe it's like he could do it independently already, but then today he comes in and then it's like, oh no, what happened? You know, so according to data, I assume he's able to do this, but according to life and what's been happening, you know, maybe it's not a good day. I should be empathetic enough to understand and know that, okay, maybe not today. Let's try again tomorrow. Or try again later.
I think, like, especially arrival routines. Mm-hmm. I think you've got an example where, like, it's pretty independent.
Yes.
After, I think one of the students went for a long holiday. And then the first day after the holiday.
Yes.
I'm not sure what to do anymore. And you have to take that into account, right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and then right, when you're right. Like, you're independent, yeah, like,
you know how to do this.
Yeah, it just creates frustration for everybody.
Yeah. Correct. Or like some kids maybe come in and upset, right? And instead of like taking out shoes and putting it back properly at the door, everything comes off and like, I don't want to do this. But then for me, it's like, no, but data says I can't be like that, right? Yeah,
it's so, just there to inform, to help you be analytical.
Correct.
For you to, it's just to help you to be analytical and then inform you what to do next, or
it's
to help you make decisions. Yeah.
Correct. I think it's a very big picture thing where, like, okay, yeah, I know, you know, he can. On a good day, he can. Mm-hmm. So, okay, then what do we want to do? Maybe you can work on the emotional regulation part.
Mm.
You know, maybe how fast you can calm down or what can help you calm down, so that we can reach that independence again, right? So yeah, data-driven, but also empathetic. I think that's one factor.
I love it.
Yeah, and I think the last one and most important, I feel, is to really set the students up for success.
Mm-hmm.
I think that... it's a very good roundup of what good teaching is, you know, because if it's too difficult and the child can't do it, you know, so many things are going to happen. A behavior is going to happen. The teacher, the educator is going to be upset. You know, everything will just like, you know, be thrown off. So setting the kids up for success, I think is definitely also part of good teaching. We work in stages, in bite size, in where they're at, like what you mentioned again, where the students are at. We work from there.
I love it. I think you summarize it really nicely with what consists of setting students up for success. It encompasses everything. Whether or not we are very clear on where they're at when they come in, all the way up to like the teaching part, being data driven, but also be very compassionate to their day-to-day events, And then zooming up to the bigger picture to look at their progress.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And which reminds me, our term one progress report is coming up.
Yes, next week.
Nice. All right, yeah. So I think we spoke about group teaching, how we organize all these things into a very systematic way, and then doing all this is going to set them up to success. It sounds like these goals are almost like, so when you talk about like, so going back to like the Venn diagram where you talk about pre-academic, you have daily learning. It sounds like, am I right to say they are like almost like subjects in school, like in our definition of what a school is? You also mentioned a little bit about like, oh, if like this kid can hold a pencil, right? Whereas you have another kid who... So can we individualize teaching methods to suit the child's learning in a small group environment? So just like you briefly also mentioned, like in a small group, right?
Mm.
So what I want to ask is that based on your experience, right, running an EIP classroom, is that realistic? Is that when you manage a few kids at once, so they the classroom has those goals, but we talk about them coming in with like, you know, some skills here, some skills there. Is that realistic? Can we individualize teaching methods to suit the child's learning need?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, yes. I think it's possible to individualize teaching methods. So tweaking like the goals a little bit. So yes, we have the, you know, like a general like classroom goal.
Mm.
Like the EIP goal is to do this.
Mm.
But like my day-to-day day. They have the same big goal, but how they get there is, can be slightly different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is where the individualization comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, imagine like a mountain and everybody wants to reach the peak, right?
But mm-hmm.
there are different ways to go mm-hmm. up, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the individualization comes in, you know, some may need more help, more scaffolding, more prompting.
Mm.
Some may, you know, want to use a different route. Could be a longer route, could be a shorter route.
Mm.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent it's possible to individualize. Also, I think in individualizing like learning, there's differentiated instructions also.
Mm-hmm.
Where the way certain lessons are presented
mm-hmm.
is differentiated. So according to that level, so similar again, you know, student A and student B, they're both learning how to, let's see, recognize numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one student maybe he can do like a tracing activity and recognizing numbers.
Mm.
Another one can do maybe a matching. Even in matching, it can be different, you know, it can be like matching the exact same number or matching same number but looks different, you know. So that can all be differentiated. It can all be presented very differently and very individualized. I think it's possible because
mm-hmm.
I think even in schools, you know, some schools at least, you know, are able to do that. And I think in schools, so this is a good transition also because in a lot of schools, I know the differentiation is done in groups. So a classroom is divided
mm-hmm.
into like a high ability, low ability, moderate ability,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of thing. So in the EIP, which is a smaller setting, that can also be implemented. Similar concept. Yeah.
End of the term or end of the school term, all of them have learned to recognize the numbers.
Correct. correct, all of them would have recognized, learned to recognize numbers. How right. they got them may be different. Maybe right. one kid can recognize 1 to 10, the other kid can recognize right. 1 to 5, but the right. goal is still met. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. So it's possible. Yeah. And I as you're talking about that, I remember going to your classroom and I saw during circle time, I think. And I think they're working on attending to the circle time instructions, and they are at different level, right? You're telling me. One of the students actually can stay throughout almost the entire duration of your planned circle time activity, whereas there are some who still has not get there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They need yes. some, like, breaks and asking for permission to leave the group
yeah.
for yes. a minute, right? Mm-hmm. I saw how you manage that. I thought you managed that. You just go on, and the other kid just go for the break adjustments accordingly. Is that yeah. that's the differentiated instruction?
Yeah, yeah. That's mm-hmm. one way to differentiate. Mm-hmm. Another way is, I don't know, to make the circle time more appealing to the one that struggles, because mm-hmm. the other one can already attend. Mm-hmm. So there are I guess, you know. Different ways, creative ways to make it work. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks for the insights. And thanks for some of the examples that you use from your classroom. So I suppose the last question is regarding these window pane skills. Mm-hmm. That's a little quick example on some of these skills that you do in your classroom. And I think in the next episode, we will talk in depth about these skills and how to teach skills.
Right, right. So the window panes,
mm-hmm.
the window frame.
The panes.
Okay, the pains. Okay, so some examples that I currently do. So say for like early literacy or early numeracy. So early literacy, and this is very early because based on the level of, you know, the kids that I have. So using flashcards, right? Yes, there are pictures, but there are also the names of, let's say, animals or shapes, right? So early literacy would be, you know, just matching the word squid and squid, or shark and shark, you know, something like that. Yeah. So that's already a combination of cognitive, because they're matching, early literacy, because they're matching words.
Yeah.
I just thought of another one. Yeah, and also like taking turns. So, you know, okay, wait, it's not your turn yet. You know, student A, is your turn. How about you do this? Or can you give me this? Or give me a picture that this word says. So the thing that I remembered was just every day doing the day and date.
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of early literacy, early numeracy as well. So what I do is I flash the day, okay? Because my kids don't have not learned like days of the week yet, dates of the week yet, but I am exposing them to that. So I flashed today's day, let's say, and then I have like a bunch of cards that have different days. So give me Tuesday, let's say, or today's Thursday. Yeah, you know, give me Thursday, something like that. So that in itself already is like a lot of skills into one. You know, you're doing early literacy, you're trying to read, you're trying to match cognitive skills, and you know, you're giving me, oh yeah, great, and then the kid can put, you know, stick it up on the whiteboard. And the same thing for date. So date would be recognizing numbers, right? So today's the 20th, I flash up the 20th date, I give them a bunch of cards, you know, let's put up 20th on the board. So things like that. It's very early numeracy, very early literacy. Can sound very super basic, but that's how it starts. that's how it starts. Yeah. So that's one example, I guess.
I think and that's very smart. I think when they're doing it, they're also learning to stay in a group. And you didn't start with all of it at once, right? It was short, getting the understand routine, and then when the data or your IEP shows like progress, and then time to introduce the day and the date and the date. I think now I see year, and then after that I see weather.
Yes, we do weather too. Yes, we do. Because we have a nice window to look out.
So they do get there.
Yes.
All right. Stay tuned for our next episode. We are going to elaborate a little bit more about these skills that are quite common when we get children ready to go to school, right? So thank you once again, Jack, for being on this episode.
And
for our audience, thank you for tuning in again. We will see you in the next episode.
All right, bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Seeds Podcast. We'll see you in the next episode.